Hey, what's up? This is Jason DeSalvo, Factory Yamaha Team Number 40. You're listening to MotoGP OD.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. I am Bob Hayes, your host, and today is June 2nd, 2006, and this is show number 63. We have a very short Mugello preview today because we have the Italian GP at Mugello coming up this weekend. Then we're going to follow that up with another conversation with Liam, and we got some. It's a really big one here. It's quite short, which is a little unusual for our Liam calls, but it's really exciting. It's a really good one, and you're going to love hearing what he has to say. And we're going to wrap things up today with a conversation that I had with Darren Carpenter, Omer Racer number 11, up there at the Portland Raceway while I was doing my track day. And I actually brought along a little portable recorder, and I sat down and chatted with Darren a couple of times through the day, and we just sort of talked about track days and things that we learned and the things that I learned mostly. Darren's an old hand at track days, so I'm sure he always gets new things that he's finding out and whatnot, but he probably didn't learn a whole lot that particular weekend other than just going out there and having a good time and teaching the new guys because he was acting as an instructor for the PSSR. So we're going to do that at the end. Before we get to all that, we do have a few administrative notes, and leading off on our administrative notes, as you know, I am going to be deployed with the Navy Reserve. I actually leave June 12th, and I have decided that I have to sell my MotoGP tickets for the Laguna Seca round in July. So I have an auction up on eBay for a package of five 3-day tickets with paddock passes, grandstand seats, and camping, and it's quite a bit of stuff. I actually made a little video commercial that you can watch on my website if you'd like. Just go to motogpod.com, and over there on the left side towards the top, there's a thing about, you know, buy Bob's USB GP tickets, and one of the things says view the movie, and there's also a link to the auction. So if you'd like to view the movie, I thought it was actually kind of funny, and you can take a look at that. And if you want to bid on the auction, that'd be great too. And if I can, I'd like to ask you another small favor. As you know, I've said this before many times in the past, I'm not going to go to some internet forum where, you know, I've never been and just post something that either always, you know, advertises for MotoGP OD, which is what I was always used to say, or just, hey, you know, I've got my tickets for sale on eBay. I'm not, you know, I don't like doing that. However, I don't think I'm ashamed to ask if you perhaps can do me that favor if you feel like it. If you don't want to, don't worry about it. But if you have an internet forum where you hang out, or if you have some friends that you know might be looking for USGP tickets or something like that, please point them to my auction. And I'm not looking to make a giant amount of money out of this. Some of this stuff on eBay is making me sick. Paddock passes that are buy it now prices for like $300 a shot and stuff like that. And these guys just buy up all the tickets at the beginning of the season with the intent, or not the beginning when they first go on sale back in October, with the intent of just, you know, scalping the crap out of them at the end. And I don't like that. And that's not what I'm trying to do here. I want to get the money that myself and my buddies from the Navy Reserve paid. And if we got a little bit more out of it, well, I'd be kind of happy with that. You know, it's sort of the mental anguish payment. But I'm not looking to make some gigantic windfall profit. That's why I'm selling the whole thing together as one package, just making it easy. Five sets of tickets and all of that. So that's enough about my eBay auction. Let's talk real quick about Steve Jones's eBay auction. And you may remember that we've talked about Steve Jones quite a few times in the past. He's made the very cool Excel spreadsheet that gives you the MotoGP race times for your local time zone, you know, so when they're going to be live, and you can watch it on MotoGP.com and all that, and it works real well, and he keeps updating it. And I'll put a link to that up on the website. But Steve Jones also arranged a trophy suite and talked about this a few times several shows ago, and he sold some tickets, and then he sort of kind of went on hiatus there a little bit, and now he's starting to try and move some more of these tickets because he got left holding the bag for a lot of money on these tickets, these trophy suites. Steve was the big organizer of the whole event, and a lot of people said, yeah, I'll do it. And then they backed out. So again, Steve never planned on having to sell off these tickets just to try to recoup his money, but that's what he's ended up doing. Now, this is a little bit more of a higher cost package than the one I was selling, which is just the normal spectator package sitting in the grandstand, the comparative cheap seats, although they are sold out, folks. However, Steve's is a fantastic deal with a trophy suite in the sort of inner paddock. And you have to see it to believe it, all the stuff that you get with this. And, you know, you're going to be paying a little bit of money for it, but it's a very, very good deal. And Steve Jones will be happy to set you up with a special deal. He is doing all of the sales through eBay, but you don't have to go and just find an auction and bid on it and take your chances and all that. Send him an email. He'll set up like a special eBay auction. You do the buy it now, bam, you're done. And one feature of these seats that he hasn't been previously highlighting a lot is that the paddock passes that are included with this trophy suite are different from the normal paddock passes, in that you don't get locked out of that inner paddock, the special inner sanctum that, you know, Dorna and the FIM closes every once in a while the MotoGP teams get ready for qualifying or for a race or what have you. It's kind of the area between the garages and the trailers. It's right there where if you're in Turn 11 grandstands, you see that's where they're starting up the bikes and all of that. However, that's where the trophy suite is, so you have to allow access in it. So anybody with a trophy suite gets this like super paddock pass that you're not going to be finding. These are better than the ones in my package. These are better than the ones that you're seeing on eBay. And you also get food and free booze and all kinds of other good stuff. So it's a really, really good package. And if you want to step up to the plate, I encourage you a lot to contact Steve Jones. His website is stevejones.cc. And the specific page is at stevejones.cc/suite, S-U-I-T-E. And of course, I will put a link to that on the website. So either way, you know, if you want to help a buddy out kind of a thing and you haven't got tickets for the USGP, consider that. All right. Enough of the blatant self-promotion and Steve Jones promotion going on. Why don't we move on to our next administrative item? And that is... okay, the doctor, Valentino Rossi, is facing the greatest challenge of his career this season so far. Can he come back and win this one? And this is the question that's been on anybody's mind. And if you want to read a really cool discussion of points and the fact that his main competition is not just one rider this year, which actually helps him, but several riders, the margins that he's won by in the past and the sheer determination that this guy has in the face of adversity, you have to read Jules Cisek's article on rideon2.com about, can the doctor come back? It's an article about Rossi's chances for winning the championship this year. It's a really good read. It's at rideon2.com, right on the front page, should be there. And I will post a direct link, of course, to that also on the website of MotoGPOD.com. So go to MotoGPOD.com, look at the show notes, and there will be a URL to the article there by Jules Cisek on rideon2.com. And while we're talking about rideon2.com, don't forget to participate in the forum of rideon2.com and the tipping competition. They basically, you know, you pick a winner, you pick the second place, you pick a DNF, and then there's points. And right now, there must be something wrong with the point scoring system because I'm just doing really, really terrible. But it's a fun game, and it's nice to see how you rank at picking the winners with some of the other guys out there. And another one that I do is racingpredictions.com. And this one's based in England. They do all sorts of different series, Formula One, MotoGP, et cetera, et cetera. And I mostly do the MotoGP. And in that one, I'm in first place, so neener, neener. And they also, they have prizes and everything else. It's run by Karen, and it's another fun site to go to. So check that one out, racingpredictions.com. And one last tiny administrative comment, although it hasn't happened yet. I'm going to be doing it here very, very shortly in the next day or two. I'm going to be using for my email, bob@motogpod.com, and I'll continue to get that email through my deployment. I'm not sure how regularly or for how long of a period at a time I'll be able to be on the internet, but I will have access to email, and I will check that one, bob@motogpod.com. Jim Race, who, as you know, is going to be taking over the show in my absence. The show is not going on hiatus. It's not going away. Jim Race is going to be doing here. He'll be doing a great job. He's got all kinds of great ideas and interviews and things that he's starting to line up. I think the show can actually use a little bit of a breath of fresh air, and Jim's going to do a fine job. And his email address is race@motogpod.com. Now, those go to each of us. If you'd like to send an email to both of us, use the motogpod@motogpod.com address, and that I'll set that one up to forward to both addresses. Right now, it hasn't quite yet been set up, but it will. And if you do send me anything that sort of includes Jim, you know, I've been forwarding those to him. So that's enough of the administrative comments and so forth. Let's get all that out of the way. And why don't we talk a little bit about the upcoming race here at Mugello? Last year's race at Mugello in 2005 was one of the best of the season. Very exciting race with an all-Italian top four for the finishers. Valentino Rossi won the race, as he has won his last four races at Mugello. Every year since 2002, Rossi has won in the premier class. However, he was pressured greatly by Biaggi, arch rival Max Biaggi, bad boy of MotoGP, no longer with us, unfortunately. Very sad to see Max go. But Max was actually in the lead there for a while. Last year, Mugello ended up taking second. We had Loris Caporossi in third, a strong showing out there on the Ducati, and Marco Melandri in fourth. So like I said, it's Italian's home track. They want to do well. They know the circuit and count on them being up front. Obviously not Max Biaggi because he's not going to be there, but Valentino Rossi, Loris Caporossi, and Marco Melandri are all going to do very well this weekend at Mugello. I predict that we're going to see Rossi win it. I think that we saw a couple weeks ago at Le Mans, we saw the true side of the doctor that we haven't seen for quite a while, where he's comes back and makes up from a third row start, not the best qualifying position, pushes his way to the front somewhat brutally, and basically ends up getting into the lead and starting to break away, and he was going to own that race until he had a very, very rare mechanical DNF. So would he have won Le Mans? Probably. Will he win Mugello? I'm saying probably, but I don't know for sure. It's been such an up-and-down season. These things are almost impossible to call anymore. It's mostly just blind guesswork on anybody's part. It always is. But in any event, we're looking for a very, very exciting race. Look for all the Italians to do well. Nicky Hayden, somewhat of an unknown quantity. I don't think he liked Mugello all that much. He didn't do that great last year. Sixth place, not bad. So, you know, we'll have to see. He was sick at Le Mans, which explains his comparatively not-so-wonderful performance after a string of 9 podiums. So, you know, hopefully he's recovered from that. We'll see what's going on there with Nicky. An unknown quantity might be Pedrosa and Stoner, although they both did quite well here last year in 250cc's, Pedrosa winning it and Stoner coming in fourth. 2004, when Pedrosa was in 250s and Stoner at the time was in 125s, they both came in second in their respective classes. So they've done very well at this track before, so they should be pretty comfortable. It's just going to be a question whether or not they can translate that to the big boy bike. And other than that, it's pretty much going to be this 2006 sort of crapshoot of just not knowing who's going to place where or what. So we're just going to have to wait and see and watch the race and enjoy it. Now, I did get a couple of press releases from Yamaha and from Suzuki, and I've been trying, you know, I try to avoid just simply reading press releases and all of that sort of thing, but both of these I thought were pretty good, so I want to bring them up. The Yamaha press release has the typical Yamaha excellent sort of description in a technical way of the track. So in their technically speaking section, they have Mugello, according to Daniel Romagnoli, who is Colin Edwards' chief mechanic. And they say at 5.245 kilometers, the Mugello circuit is one of the longer contemporary MotoGP circuits, due in no small part to the fact that it's retained its original length and layout. So this is an old-style classic circuit that's been, you know, modernized for safety and all of that without stripping away its character. And Mugello differs from other fast circuits in its frequent changes of gradient and the speed of its chicanes. There's a mix of slower and high-speed corners, although even the slowest corners are wide, allowing several perfect lines and putting the emphasis on rider skill as well as chassis setup precision. Romagnoli says that generally it's a very complex track and the rider can make the difference. It has a very hard braking into turn one, where the riders go from around 330 kilometers an hour to just 85 km/h. Then there's the sequence of S's, where it's important to have a bike that has good turning capabilities and agility. There's some quick changes in direction with uphill and downhill turns, so you need a good compromise with the setup to make it turn well into both types of corner. So thank you very much, Yamaha, for sending out that little technical description. I like those. Then the other one I wanted to talk about real quick was from Suzuki, which since Suzuki got the Rizla sponsorship, the emails that we get from Suzuki are a lot more tongue-in-cheek, it seems like, lately. And this one I thought was particularly so. They say, Tuscany possesses Italy's best racetrack, Mugello. Straight out of Mother Nature's top drawer, Mugello wends its way through a breathtakingly beautiful Tuscan valley, following the lines dictated by millions of years of soil erosion, providing us with possibly the best modern racetrack on the MotoGP calendar. It is simply the realm of the Mountain Kings, largely because Mugello ignores any EU directives that all circuits should be exactly the same 4 kilometers in length, featuring no corners faster than the legal Autostrada speed limit, and conform to EU tarmac regulation EIEIO subsection 666. So there, like I said, you can see a little bit of that tongue-in-cheek sort of attitude that we're getting from Rizla in the Suzuki press releases. They continue on to say, so if you want to see how Vermeulen and Hopkins times would compare to Sheen or Schwantz, you have to go to Mugello because everywhere else has been changed or replaced. So it was kind of good. Thanks very much for that there to the Rizla Suzuki team. So what do we got going on with Mugello? Like I said, look for the Italians to be up front, and I'm going to be calling Rossi to win it, like I said earlier on. But either way, it's going to be a good race, and we're looking forward to it. All right, we got Liam Schubert on the phone. Managed to get a hold of him. Hi, Liam. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. I just arrived into Mugello, Italy, via Florence on Tuesday, and it's Thursday, I guess the 1st of June.
And what's going on there in Mugello? Are you at that race as a spectator?
Well, I'm at the race, and let me tell you, first of all, if you get a chance to come to Mugello for any reason, come in through Florence. The scenery from the airplane and at the airport is just absolutely magnificent. Patchwork of fields, different types of greens, long lakes, twisting mountains. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And, I'm here because today I got to start my first MotoGP bike on Hot Pit Lane.
Awesome. So you're down there working, right?
You bet, you bet. I got my permanent pass yesterday. I've been officially hired by Dantin MotoGP to work on the Ducati Desmo Sedici, which this is my first time working on a V4. And, well, actually I owned a V4 that was Japanese, but this is a completely different animal.
I'll bet.
And the last 2 days have just gone by in a blur. From my viewpoint, being a gearhead, being around this machinery and actually feeling it and touching it while you're revving the motor, it's just all my circuits are fried at this point. And wow, I made it. I'm in the circus.
That's fantastic. Now, is this a permanent gig?
Yes, this will be for the rest of the season, 12 races. So I will be back in Laguna Seca. And as I had predicted, something came through. You know, with I think enough hard work. One of the byproducts of hard work is luck, and I got really, really lucky. So
that's fantastic, Liam. And a lot of times you make your own luck. And this, for listeners out there, this is news to me. I knew that Liam was at Mugello, and I knew he was working for Dantin, but I didn't know it was a permanent thing. So congratulations, Liam. We're all happy for you. That's freaking awesome. And
Thank you.
Rush to be working on the actual MotoGP bike and kind of starting to fulfill that dream. And so that's great. So tell us about it. What? Here's a question for you. When you're a mechanic on a MotoGP bike, do you have a shop manual or what? What do they, you know, you got an engine there that's a prototype.
Well, I can't go into too many specifics about that.
No, that's cool.
There is factory training for the top guys, and then they do a trickle-down of information. Everything I need to know will be shown or I'm told, and also, some of it is just fairly straightforward. Once you get under the skin, you know, some of us can just look at it and go, oh, okay, A to B to C, et cetera. I'm working under a fantastic mechanic named Lele, who's our chief mechanic for Alex Hoffman's bike. And working with Hoffman is just an amazing experience. I hadn't been aware, but he's fluent in 5 languages.
Wow.
So he's able to communicate on the fly in German, Spanish, English, French, just amazing. And just a really nice guy. He's happy to have me on board. And you know, as I told him, I'll do my best so that he can do his best. And, you know, it's a really interesting family that I've joined. We've got all different types of cast members, and just fantastic. Fantastic. We took our team photo today on the racetrack. We pushed the bikes up the main straight. It goes up a slight crest, as people will know, and put the bikes side by side and took our photos. And I'm still in shock that I'm here and I'm in.
Yeah, that's so freaking awesome. That is really, really cool. I'm a little overwhelmed. Like I said, I knew you were down there, and I knew you'd been working, but I hadn't quite connected the dots, and I didn't realize it was a permanent thing. So, working with Alex Hoffman,
I wasn't positive myself, so I didn't say anything earlier. You know, as always, I have a couple irons in the fire because when you're just kind of floating around, it's good to put out a lot of hooks, and hopefully, one big fish will get one. Because none of the hooks are guarantees, but it looks like this season it's full tilt boogie, and I have to say, the more I thought about it, because I haven't been able to sleep the last two nights, you know, actually just arriving via Florence and spending time there, and then it was storming when we got our rental car, which was a van, and we're actually about 45 minutes from the circuit up in the mountains, and it was snowing when we arrived at about 11:30 at night. And you know, from snow at in the darkness of night to amazing scenery through the hills and the mountains and almost running down a flock of sheep that just decided to cross the road in the middle of nowhere, which I did manage to snag a photo of, so I'm happy about that. But then it was pouring today at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then as the day progressed, I mean, now it's the most beautiful day I've ever seen. And I don't know what it is about being in Italy, but Ducati Red is brighter than I've ever seen it.
I'll bet. Now, where is Mugello in relationship to in Italy and in relationship to Bologna and all that?
It's on the northern half. It's about in the center between Bologna, which is on the eastern side, and Florence, which is on the western side. And I'm still just in shock that it's particularly special for me, because even though Ducati has debuted their new 800 and everyone's about to drop their new 800 bike for next season, this is the last season of the big bike, you know, and to get a chance to be around and work on the most powerful machine racing today, it's just phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
And I know that eventually the 800s will make as much power as the 1000s are making today, but on this day, at this moment, my bike is a beast.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, and it is. You're right. It's a little bit like the end of an era kind of a thing and all of that, and definitely the chance of a lifetime. That's just fantastic. Now, working, like you said, with so you're working on Alex Hoffman's bike. How many mechanics are sort of assigned to that bike?
We have four, technically. Well, I guess technically it's three and a half, and I'm the half.
Oh.
Because not only do I assist the mechanics, which because of my ability, I can do a little bit more than the traditional assistant. And then I also facilitate, you know, making sure the box is clean, taking care of the fairings and the wheels, tires, and fuel. It's a fantastic opportunity for me to learn. And it's really special that I didn't have to slog my way up through 125 or 250, which I actually don't have anything against them, but I can't fathom actually working on one because I technically don't have any experience with the two strokes, and that's where the magic and the mystery is. If I had to compare the two, it's the four strokes is hard science, and the two strokes, it's magic, you know, experience and magic in my mind. Because of the way you can achieve over rev or slightly more horsepower depending on weather conditions, it's an arcane art to me. So I'm just really happy to be here with the monstrous four stroke, and today I started one, and geez, I think my heart stopped for about 2 seconds until the exhaust blew me out of the way, and man, Man, what a great day.
Yeah, no, that's great. So that sound, you're down there right next to the exhausts, and you get that crackle coming up, and that must have been a rush.
Yeah, I have a special headset. You know, we all have special ear mufflers, and they're so trick. They're rechargeable, and they've got external speakers on each side, so you can turn them on and alter the volume of what you're hearing through the headphones. And Robbie Rolfo, last year's rider, is hanging out at the track today, and they also debuted the street Desmo Sedici. So I got to see that first, and what a gorgeous machine. So different than anything else out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the press release about it, and it's been kind of, you know, popping up on the radar that, you know, going to be available, next June, next July, something like that?
I believe it's the first one is being delivered to the customer this weekend.
Wow. Oh, that's soon. Yeah, it is June now, isn't it? Duh. Time is flying for me. So, yeah. But, yeah, no, that's awesome. And just the whole thing down there. So you're staying, you said, in a villa up in the mountains with a whole team up there or just some of you guys?
Yeah, the whole team is there except for the pilots and the team boss. And, you know, it's multi-levels. I think it's a three-story castle, I guess is a better way to describe it. And it's got a basement and fireplaces everywhere, and it's on the most beautiful property I've ever seen. I mean, if I wanted to go on a honeymoon, you know, I'd take the bike up there. Just absolutely gorgeous with hot springs that give us a heated swimming pool, and you know, we don't have time or energy to use it. So
I was just going to say, yeah, I don't think you're going to be spending a lot of time there, are you? But, huh.
Right. Well, we arrived on Tuesday because Wednesday is the setup day where we built the pit box and also watched the two giant semi-trucks. And unfortunately, it rained on the semi-trucks, so that's a little bit of a disappointment for me. But just amazing, and I'm really happy to be working with these people because they've got so many different aspects and different experiences within the racing community. And having worked for every team, you know, factory Honda, factory Yamaha, Ducati, Aprilia, you know, we've got master mechanics of every breed, and here we are.
This is great. And like I said, it is the sort of, you know, the kind of culmination of your dream to an extent. Now, the buddy you had last weekend there, and I've forgotten his name, but he got called up real quick right before Le Mans. Is he also working in Dan Team with you?
No, unfortunately for him, I took the job.
Oh.
On the permanent basis. So, which is something we actually worked out a little bit between ourselves that, okay, it'll be my shot right now because with some of the other business and racing that he's got going on in his life, it's not feasible for him to take this position.
Okay.
And I'm the perfect replacement, and I'm just really lucky I get along with everybody, and it's so good. I mean, as I was walking around a little bit through the paddock this afternoon, you know, everybody that I've spoken with in the past is like, hey, you're in. You know, you made it. And just phenomenal.
No, that's outstanding. And it's good, too, that it sounds like you're you know, there's not a lot of bad blood or something like that with the other guy.
Right.
That you know. So.
None at all. Yeah. None at all. We kind of made a deal, actually, when I first met him before we went to Qatar together, that if either of us got the chance, that, you know, we'd help push the other one up in there. And, you know, it's my lucky time at this point. But then again, I'm 8 years older than him, so I got my time.
Yeah. So, wow, that's great. So, well, you got to definitely make the most of this.
Yeah, I've got to go.
Yeah.
Actually, I've probably taken longer than I should have, but I just want to give a big shout out to everybody and say keep on working hard and, you know, keep your eye on the racing and understand that, Dunlop's still doing homework, but we are ready. We do everything we can to be as prepared and as competitive, and we just do our best. I mean, that's all why we're here.
Exactly.
We're here to do our best.
I think that's understood, and we expect to see Dantine out there, and we'll keep an eye out for you and let us know exactly how it goes on, and maybe we can get a call in next week if you have time. And if we don't talk to you again, Bob and you know, MotoGPOD talking to Liam, I want to wish you the best of luck for the rest of the season and have a good time. Enjoy it while you can, and I hope your ride continues. And thank you very much for your time today, Liam. It was awesome.
No problem, Bob. I'm going to miss you, and I know MotoGPod and all the fans. MotoGPOD. MotoGPOD will miss you. You've really built it into something special, and I know Jim's going to take good care of it for you while you're in Mississippi. So take care of yourself and be safe overseas, all right?
Roger that. Not a problem. And a lot of the thanks go to you, Liam. I always get a lot of emails saying how much everybody likes you. So, all righty. Bye, Liam.
Okay. Take care, guys, and look for the bald guy.
All right.
In the black shirt.
Look for the
me.
Bald guy in the black shirt. Roger that.
All right. Bye.
So congratulations again to Liam for landing that full-time job for the rest of the season with Dantin Ducati MotoGP team. I think that's fantastic, and enjoyed talking to him, and hopefully we can hook up with him maybe one more time before we go. And, of course, Jim Race is going to keep Liam on speed dial as well. I just can't pass up the chance to talk to somebody that's in that position and really interesting guy. So best of luck, Liam. Go out there, work hard, do good, and have fun, and take lots of pictures, and let us know how you're doing. Alrighty, as I said in the introduction, I just did a track day, my second track day ever, and the second in about 2 weeks up here. It was May 30th up at Portland Raceway, and I did that kind of pitted with Darren Carpenter, who races in Oregon Motorcycle Road Racing Association. He's a club racer. He's Omron number 11, and we took a little time out during lunch and kind of sat down and kind of did a little chat session there about track days and so forth. So I'm going to play the first part of all of that right now. I'll have the second part in a future podcast. And it's interesting stuff. We are done with the MotoGP conversation, but I think that you, if you're a motorcyclist, and I'm pretty sure most of you are, that hearing about track days and everything is good, interesting stuff. I got a lot of comments the last few times I've talked about it. So here we go. All right, I'm sitting here with Darren Carpenter, Omron number 11, and we're out here doing a track day with Pacific Super Sport Riders at Portland International Raceway and kind of having a good day. So, Darren, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
How are you doing?
I'm also doing fine.
This is your second day, second track day.
Yep, just the second track day. It's with the same track but a different organization. And I kind of wanted to compare some of the things that we found about the two organizations. Darren's actually an instructor here with PSSR, so that's kind of cool.
So I'll be biased, of course.
Oh, yeah.
We're also running a different configuration this morning. Normally, the Portland International Raceway has two configurations, one that they use for cars, and what they do for that is they add a chicane or festival curves on the front straight so that there's a hard right and then another hard left and then you're back onto the front straight. And motorcycles normally don't run that festival curves because we don't have to. Cars, they've added it because the front straight is so long, the cars just get way too high. You know, the high speeds are just too much. So they added that to slow the cars down. We don't need that for motorcycles. And there's also a few safety concerns as far as when you're actually racing, because you're leaving the front straight and then coming back onto the front straight. So, you know, there are some safety concerns there as well.
Like a wall right in front of you as you re-enter the straight.
Right, right.
But if you've watched Champ Car at all, Champ Car races here in Portland, and they use those chicanes. So Champ Car or CART or whatever they're calling it nowadays, which I think is coming up soon.
Yeah.
21st or something like that, I think it is. So.
Right.
But so, yeah, we've been doing that configuration in the morning, and it was Darren knows this track a lot better than I do, so for him, it's like, well, it's obvious how different it makes the circuit. For me, I didn't, you know, I'd only had done the one track day, and the chicane was interesting, and it did throw another left-hander in there, and I never quite perfected getting through it, and I've only done three sessions so far today, and then they're going to pull the chicane for the afternoon session, so.
But. Right, the afternoon will run the full straight, so, but it was just nice. I know a lot of people that live in Portland, and we do track days, and we race. I have a hard time getting to other tracks, just in general, and, you know, when you do Portland International, the same track over and over and over again, it is kind of a nice treat that they throw in three turns, that it's like, wow, I never had to get to second gear before. And you know, makes it, it does, if you know the track really well like I do, you, it really messes up everything. Like normally, you know, what would be turn one is now turn four, and instead of breaking into that turn, you're driving towards the turn. So all those little nuances kind of stick out if you know the track.
Cool. So would you say that
If you were going to have your druthers, would you rather have them run it all day for that or go back to the normal? Not thinking of practicing for race, but something of what you're just coming out to a track day to sort of enjoy the track.
You know, it doesn't matter to me either way. I like the track. I like it with the turns and with in the front straight as well. It's kind of nice the way the Pacific Supersport riders is doing it today. They're using it the morning sessions with the chicane and the afternoon without the chicane. So this morning, you know, we have the chicanes, we have the extra turns. This afternoon, we'll take it away. And, you know, one of the nice things that people like about PIR is the front straight is so long. With that festival curves, you can't get up to top speed, but now in the afternoon, we'll be able to light it up and just take off down the front straight. So I like it both ways, to be honest with you. If I had my preference and if it was safe, I would prefer to have those turns there for all the time, even when we're racing. You know, more turns just makes it a rider's track, not an engine builder's track.
That's a good point.
There are some safety issues, so that's why they don't run it.
Okay, cool. Talking about how on a track day, back on sort of talking about the track days and everything, some of the things that we're seeing out here and the lessons that we're learning. Like I said, this is only my second track day. Darren's had, you know, he's a racer. He's got tons of experience out here at Portland and at other tracks. And I did a couple podcasts earlier about this, of the things that you see and learn and do and how new it is. And it's definitely a lot different on the second day. I felt like I was sort of, you know, ahead of the game just going into the very first session, right, even with the chicanes.
Yeah, the first day, you know, everybody that I've talked to goes through the same thing. The first day you're just so overwhelmed and you don't know what you're supposed to do and you don't know what the flags mean and you're not sure what you're, you know, how fast you should go. I mean, everything is new. And so it's really hard to kind of keep focused, you know, and just enjoy the day. After the first day, it's, you know, you're like, hey, I've done this before. You know, come into the pits, you're like, I know where I know I need to set up my pit tent. I know I need to get ready. I know if my bike's okay. So you can kind of go at it at a much easier pace, it seems like, and enjoy the day. And also you can think more about your riding. You know, I always tell people the very first track day you do, just go have fun. Don't worry about working on your lines or trying to drag a knee or any of that stuff. Just go have a fun time and, you know, get addicted to it. The second and third and fourth time you come out, then start thinking, okay, well, you know, I want to work on this one thing, or I want to work on my corner speed, or I want to work on braking later, or I want to work on getting on the throttle sooner. You know, all these things that you can do to make yourself faster and a better rider. And but the first day is just so overwhelming.
Yeah. Now, we had the opportunity to, I followed you around for a few laps, and you followed me around for a few laps, and we did that for like the last couple of sessions a couple weeks ago at the Cascade Track Time Track Day, and then we just did it again out here at a session here. And now, not to talk about, you know, hey, am I improving? But did you notice? Did you notice a much difference
this is where
in
Bob wants
my
to tell everybody that he won the race. He was the fastest guy out here for this track day. No, you obviously were getting better. I mean, you know, that's the whole thing when you're doing a track day. You get repetitive. You know, if you're out on a twisty road up in the mountains somewhere, and you're doing, going on a ride with some buddies, you really can't push it. I mean, even if it's a road you've been on a handful of times, you know, you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what's up ahead. It's stupid to try to go as fast as you can go. But the track, it's the safest environment you can be, so now you can start to push it. And the fact that you're doing lap after lap, even though it's a 2-mile track, you know, you're doing like at least 10 laps every session. You know, you're coming around and you can think, okay, I've done this turn once before. I know I braked here, you know, it felt good, it felt bad. You kind of think about those things and you can improve on it and you can build your confidence up. And, you know, for the most part, the second, third, you're just going to get faster every time out.
Yeah.
You know, when I started, I did a track day and then I took the novice school. And then a month later, I did an endurance race with somebody else. It was a 4-hour race. And that endurance race is really what got me up to speed, you know, as fast as possible, because it's a 4-hour race. You know, you're doing a 30-minute session, and it's not like a track session where you're doing 30 minutes, but you kind of, you know, you need to be careful about passing, and you need to kind of keep, you know, consider it, don't want to cut somebody off. It's a race, an endurance race. So now you're going as fast as you can go, and you're trying to keep up with other people, and the guys who are way faster than me, occasionally they would pass me right before a turn, and so then I'm like, okay, let me see if I can follow them just for this one turn or two turns and see if I can kind of keep up with them, and it really helps bring your speed up. So the more time you get out on the track, the better you're going to get.
Right. And it's going to help your street riding as well. Now, do you ride a street bike?
I unfortunately don't.
Okay.
I'm in the process right now of talking to somebody about how we can make my race bike street legal. And when I say street legal, I mean just the bare minimums that you need to make it street legal. So I'll get some bar end mirrors to put on the mirrors. I'll probably get, they have some really small LED lights that you can use now for brake lights and turn signals that kind of just mount up in the bodywork. So I'll probably get that because that'll be light and easy. And then the other thing I need to get is some kind of front headlight and turn signals. And the guy I'm talking to about making something for me, he was talking about how we can use the actual brackets that are for the bodywork to just kind of take bodywork off, put this one thing on that'll have a headlight and turn signal. So
kind of a naked Street Fighter sort of thing going on. Yeah, that's cool.
I wish I had a street bike, but I can't afford both.
No, and that's, you know, so you're racing. That's cool. A lot of guys are only doing track time. Jim Race, in fact, co-host of MotoGPOD, only has a race bike now. He doesn't ride on the street anymore. Primarily, he just feels it's too unsafe. You know, he's down in Sacramento area, and it's, you know, crowded city traffic and all of that. I typically ride to work. That's my, you know, I commute, and I'm on the interstate most of the time. It's fairly quiet, so I'll get going pretty fast, but it's also, you know, it's the interstate. There's not a lot of twisties and things like that. I do go out for the occasional ride on the roads around, but I always find that I'm just so sketchy about the condition of those roads, and I've come around corners and found, you know, boxes in the middle of the road or gravel spilling out of somebody's driveway where it's not really even gravel, it's just like coarse sand, and you know, you get a moment on those. So I've never been much of an aggressive rider on the street, and if anything, that somewhat has handicapped me here, because I've got 6 years of riding experience, I think, but then, you know, doing the first track day here a couple weeks ago, I came out and you just don't realize what your motorcycle is capable of. And
it's amazing what motorcycles can do. You know, the modern street bike, sport bike, you think about it, the bike you go to the dealership to buy today is probably, and you know, you might know this better than me, but I think that's the bike that they were racing in MotoGP like 15 years ago. You know, and that's the bike that they're racing in AMA minus a few years. You know, I mean, the bikes you buy at the show before are just incredible.
They are. They're so good. And with a few thousand dollars worth of suspension upgrades and things, you can be at definitely the mid-level of AMA.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the privateers out there are on...
Well, there was an interesting article in Road Racer magazine with Jake Toke.
Road Racing World, Jeremy Toy, right.
Right, and he took an R1, I think, and he test drove it for the magazine and basically said, this bike is so good I can finish in the top 10.
Right.
And they said, prove it. And he did. You know, and what was interesting about that article, I don't know if you read it, but his first, like, one or two races where he had minimal, just the bare minimum what you need done to a bike to make it okay to get on the track, he finished like in 10th and 11th, 12th. I mean, he did fairly good.
In the top half, I think he was, or ballparky, yeah.
As the season went on and he started making more and more upgrades, he actually did worse.
Oh, really? I didn't follow that closely.
You know, because you start to add in all the suspension components, well, then you got to get it dialed in correctly. And if you don't dial it in correctly, you actually kind of go backwards a little bit before you go forward. So
yeah. I do remember reading one article where he said that the suspension just wasn't quite up to what he wanted, and he did. But yeah, I know that the season as a whole wasn't all that great for him. But yeah, the first few races, he was out there with a big old license plate bracket,
right,
hanging off the back of the motorcycle.
Right.
And yeah, that was pretty funny. But so they are. They're stupendous motorcycles.
Well, and the thing about the, like, you're talking about riding down the street and riding on the track. There, you know, when I do go street riding, which isn't very often, but you know, I go on the street and I go riding on the street to enjoy the ride. You know, I'm not going to push it. I'm not trying to go as fast as I can. I go out because I like to ride and I like to go on nice scenic roads up the mountains. And so I'm not pushing it. But since I've been on the track and I know the limits of my bike, that when I'm on the twisty roads, I know I'm well within my limits. And if something does come up, you know, where a box, you come around the corner and then maybe something in the road or, you know, there's gravel or whatever, you know, before I started doing track days and started racing, that might have been a flag to me, like, oh no, this is unexpected, and I don't know what I'm going to do, and you know, you got to slow down, are you going to slip or slide, you don't know. But when you're starting doing track days, you're comfortable going so much faster that now when you're on the street and you're on a twisty road and you come around a corner and you see something you don't expect, you're at a much calmer state. You're like, okay, no problem, I'll brake, I'll just go around it this way or that way. And it's much easier, you know, to be safe on the street. I understand Jim Racing with riding down in the Bay Area. I think he's from Northern California, isn't he?
Yeah, Fair Oaks is.
And I rode down that area as well, and it's just, you drive to work every day, and I had to drive on 101, and, you know, it's just that traffic where it's bumper to bumper, but everybody's still doing 50, you know, or 60 miles an hour. There's just no room for air, and I didn't like it either. You know, you're paying too much attention to the cars around you, and it's no longer a fun ride. It's more of like survival mode.
Work. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, whereas you get out here to the track, and you don't have to worry about a car pulling out in front of you. There's just so many fewer things you have to worry about. And we kind of covered that in a few podcasts of some of the things that, if you have not yet done a track day, you know, the things that, those newbie lessons. And I covered a few things like strapping the bike down correctly. And in fact, I've addressed that this time. I'm using a cycle cinch. And it's made it so much easier, so much better. There's a couple other products out there on the market, but basically it's a sort of a strap, slips over the bar ends, and then you use your ratcheting tie downs or whatever that you have to secure the bike with that, rather than trying to run across a triple tree or some Mickey Mousery, which is what I did on my first track day, and it made it a lot different, a lot easier. Other than that, how can people get started on a track day? If you've never done a track day, what would you tell somebody to go do?
Well, the first thing you want to do is just find out the closest track to your house and look up on their website. You're bound to find links and information about racing organizations. You're bound to find information about people who just do track days. So go to their website, look up, you know, almost all of them will have some kind of information for a first-time person that's never been to a track before. But you can start finding information out that way. You can always come out to the track when there is a track day or a race, and not race, but just come out and see what's going on. You know, you can come out here at lunchtime and walk around in the pits and talk to other people that are doing a track day to kind of say, you know, hey, what's it like? I've never done one. I'm thinking about doing one. And I think if you started a sentence off like that, almost 90% of the people, or everybody that I know, 100% of the people I know would be willing, and, you know, they'll want to sit down and talk to you. I've gotten so much help from just random people over the course of my track days and racing. You know, it's still kind of a club environment, so people want people to get involved, and you know, we want to encourage other people to get off the street and get on the track. It's a lot of fun,
right?
And it makes it more fun for us the more people that come out as well.
It definitely is a very a club-like, friendly, chummy atmosphere, and people, you know, do pull up next to somebody, they will. You know, I had somebody this morning, you know, hey, can you give me a hand real quick? And it's just totally normal and natural. Things that you may not always see in other environments where you're thrust in there with a bunch of people. Because, you know, we're all out here, we all like motorcycles, and it's just sort of the way it's done.
So, right.
And that's nice. It's fun. Plus, they give you lunch at this one, so, you know.
Right. Free lunch is always nice as well, so. But no, to get on the track, it really doesn't take much. You know, if you have a motorcycle, I've seen BMW touring bikes. I've seen Old Wings doing a track day before. I've even seen two guys on a Harley Cruisers. Of course, they did it just for half a day, I think. They weren't out in the afternoon when the speeds started really increasing. But that just goes to show you, it doesn't matter what kind of bike you have. I mean, obviously, the people who have sport bikes are more inclined to go out and do a track day because it's a sport bike and that's kind of lends itself. But any kind of motorcycle that's in good working shape, you've got good brakes, you've got good tires, you know, it's not leaking any fluids, it's not, you know, parts aren't falling off, you basically can get that bike to the track. My only suggestion for people, if you have a street bike that you ride on the street and you come out to the track, just try to take off as much of the street stuff as you can, you know. And the only reason for that is if something were to happen and you do crash, I mean, people do crash at the track. At least if you have all your street body work in the garage, well, when you get the bike back, that still looks brand new.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you haven't done too much damage even.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Mirrors, lights, and all that. Unless you wouldn't have broken those. And exactly. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, on the mix of bikes here, there's a lot of SV650s. which has always been written up as a very popular
track.
Bike.
There's a lot of Ducati Monsters.
Yes.
Two or three of them I saw as well. And then, you know, you get some random sport touring bikes. I think there's a BFR out there. And
saw BMW as well with the luggage attachments and all that. Didn't obviously have the luggage on it.
I think that's a requirement to take off the luggage.
Luggage. It's not going to leave your luggage out there on the track. But, you know, these are just regular motorcycles.
Right, and then beyond that, so, you know, it does help if you have shade. You know, most of the time it's going to be sunny and warm, and if you're in Southern California, it could easily be a 100-plus 100-degree day. So you can buy EZF shade. I got mine for $80. You can go to Target. The first one I had was $20, but it took like 20 minutes to set up because they were about, I don't know, 50 little pieces. You had to kind of...
Not so easy up.
But, I mean, that's something you can get. It's not very expensive.
Right.
Just provide yourself some simple shade. You know, lots of water, lots of fluids. You know, those kind of things. Extra gas can. So, you know, those are nice things that obviously make the day much easier.
And it will take time to accumulate all this stuff unless you're just, you know... have a huge budget, you know, you're not going to go out and buy everything you need on the first day, and that's why it's kind of always nice to find the groups of people and things like that, because people are always willing to help. And
right.
If you know, if you can get your motorcycle somehow in your truck or on the trailer or whatever, you know, at home, then you're sure to find somebody that has a ramp that will be more than happy to help you unload it there at the track.
Again,
still going to have to worry about getting it off the truck at home, but you know, these things aren't insurmountable, and there's always, you know, people will loan you stuff and all that, and it's, yeah, definitely something to do.
Right. Let's see, what else do we need to know? I did want to mention, I know Bob had talked a few times about he didn't want to be the slowest person out there. And really, you know, from everybody that I know that has done more than one track day, they don't care. You know, when I'm on the track and I'm going by somebody at a super high speed, I don't even pay them a second thought.
You right.
know, everybody's out here and everybody's having fun. And everybody's kind of doing their own thing and trying to make themselves better. And so if you're concerned that, you know, you don't want to be out there and be going slow, it's not a concern.
No, I don't think, as long as you're not a hazard. But really, that's why they have groups. And part of my stress about that is I think it's the military training type of things and stuff of never standing out. You know, you want to blend in with the group. So you don't want to be marked as the slow guy. But no, it's cool, and I'm definitely not the fastest out there. But I am doing, you know, I'm doing fine and having a good day, and looking forward to the afternoon session.
The other thing I wanted to mention that we talked about doing track time and riding on the street and how when you do track time it makes you a better street rider. One of the things that I think really helps on the street is, you know, when you're riding on the street, that you read this in a lot of places, they say you need to be focused, you need to be paying attention to watch cars around you, watching things, you know, in your peripheral vision, checking up to see who's beside you on the traffic and trying to kind of guess what the driver's going to do based on their head signals and all those things. Well, when you're on the track, you don't have to think about anything else. But if you're going as fast as you can go, whatever that is, you really have to pay attention. Like, you know, what, maybe you're, you know, not the fastest guy out there, but if you're reaching your limit, then you're going to have to force yourself to focus, to hit your brake markers, to hit, you know, the turn points, to find all of those things. And what happens is when you force yourself to focus in on all of those things, and then occasionally a rider will come up beside you and pass you, or maybe you've got to make a pass somewhere, and they get kind of close. You know, those are really, it's fine-tuning your ability to stay focused.
Right.
And to focus on your riding. And then when you get on the street, you know, you know what that is like to be focused. You know, you're going to be less likely to daydream about, you know, the planes overhead as you're driving home on I-5 or wherever you might live.
Right, and you'll also develop, you know, like muscle memory type things of if something does happen, you know, you've corrected it before you've even thought about it,
right.
And things like that, and you're gonna, it's a much safer environment to learn that. One thing that they talk about, before I get to that, I really had no idea how much track days do with instruction. You price track schools, and they're fairly spendy, and I sort of always thought that track day would be, you know, let's have the riders meeting, and you know, maybe there's some guy to lead you around or something, and that's about it. But really, both these track schools that I've done, or track days, excuse me, that I've done with Cascade Track Time and PSSR here, there's been classroom sessions and a lot of instruction as well. So, I mean, you're getting that at good value.
I mean, if you think about, I think one of the national, you know, big name schools is the Keith Coe Superbike School, and I think their one day school is about $500.
It's in the hundreds of dollars.
And that's, I think, if you use your own bike. If you want to use their bike, I think that's an extra $200. If you want to use their leathers, it's an extra, you know, so you're getting up to, you know, $700 for a single day on the track. And, you know, they have a program, and they obviously they're well known. They all across the country, and they must be doing something right or they'd be out of business. But, you know, our track schools here, our track days, I should say, the Pfister track day and the Cascade track day, they're under $200. You know, it varies on whether you buy a package deal or if you do a one-day deal. But, yeah, we've got instructions in the classroom as well. So it's not like they just throw you out there.
Right.
Now, I will say I have done track days where it was like that.
Oh.
My very first track day was with another group. It wasn't with PSSR, and it wasn't with Cascade. And it was what I expected. It was a writer's meeting in the morning, and you're on your own. And I'm sure I could have maybe found somebody to, you know, ask for some help and ask for instruction, but I was a first-time person, didn't know anybody, didn't want to stand out, didn't want to ask questions. So I kind of just did my own thing.
Right.
But there are, you know, so there are some things like that, and you kind of can find out on the website or maybe talk to the people that run the program how much instruction do they do. Cascade Track Time and the Pfister Track Days, they do a 15-minute meeting, I think, every hour. So you get off the track, you know, you have time to get off your track, get out of your leathers, and you go and sit down and they talk about the track and gearing and where you want to be and passing zones and things like that. So that all that stuff helps.
Sure. And that's not to say that the true track schools like the Superbike School or Freddie Spencer's school, Freddie Spencer's is really targeted racers, but those schools are still good. It's just that, you know, you're spending a lot more money. And I mean, believe me, you know, it's on my list of things I do want to do to go to one of those schools, but that's a much more expensive goal, you know, and unfortunately, you know, I have kid to feed and rent to pay and all of that. So this is a good way to go out there and you are safe and stuff. And what I was getting at also about the instruction here in both organizations, they did rely heavily on Keith Coe's book, A Twist of the Wrist. They talk about the theories and techniques that he has where you have the pie of your traction pie, you know, and you've used up and the 1 through 10, you know, and I read Twist of the Wrist, it's been a while, I don't have it memorized, but that you know, you only have so many credits, you know, so if you're turning and braking, well, you know, you might exceed your balance is the gist of what it is. If you haven't read Twist of the Wrist, it's worth reading. You can get it at Amazon.com or eBay or wherever. It's a good book. It's an entertaining read.
Right. I mean, and along those lines, I think what you were talking about was you have, Keith Coe talks about, you've got $10 worth of attention.
Yes, that's it. $10 worth of attention.
And
yes.
If you spend a dollar of it thinking about braking and another dollar thinking about your turning points and all these other things, pretty soon you're going to use up your $10 and then you don't have anything left to give. And so, yeah, all those things kind of apply.
So, all in all, I think that that's kind of a probably as good a place as any stop. We might do a little bit more chatting later on in the day. Great talking with you, Darren.
Thank you very much. Talking to you, Bob.
Okay.
And have fun over in Iraq.
Iraq, eventually. Yeah, Iraq via Gulfport. Yeah.
Right. Have fun at Gulfport.
Oh, yeah.
And let us know. And hopefully when you get back, we'll do another track day next year.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Okay, that's going to do it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. And as always, like I said, email address is bob@motogpod.com. And if you'd like to send comments to both myself and Jim Race, send it to motogpod@motogpod.com. And also, one more thing. Thanks again to Jules Cisek for the special version of the intro music that we're running lately with the Are You Ready, Bob? In there, which I thought was kind of funny. It's a good one. I enjoy the music that Jules has made for us. So thanks a lot, Jules. And until next time, have fun watching Mugello. Don't forget that it's on this weekend, whether you're watching on MotoGP.com or Speed TV or Eurosport or whatever it is in your neck of the woods. Make sure you follow that, and we will have a race wrap-up probably on Tuesday for the Italian Grand Prix at Mugello. So, until then, talk to you later. Enjoy the races.
Where's this damn disclaimer? Here it is. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.